I have quick good news for you.
Oh, what?
I have a phone interview with somebody in the next few days for a part-time job, and I will be actually writing.
Oh my God, is this the one that I get to be a reference for you for?
Yes, it is.
That is amazing. I'm so excited, and I've been practicing my speech. Listen, Marie does not eat children.
There's our cold open.
I know. Hi, and welcome to Go Your Own YA, a podcast about the young adult literature you never knew you loved. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie. Carrie, what did we read this week?
This week, we read a bunch of stuff. This week, we read excerpts from the Betsy Tacy series by Maud Hart Lovelace. We did this because it is the holiday season, and the Betsy Tacy books, just like The Unlikely Romance of Cape Yorkman, they are wonderful depictions of cozy Midwestern Christmases.
But Carrie, aren't these shelved in the middle grade section?
Oh my God, you're right. We have to stop this right now. No more podcast. Bye, everybody. See you next time. Do, 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 do.
Readers and listeners, the later six books in the series take us from when our heroine is 14 up until she's about 22, 23, somewhere around that.
We better back up and talk about just what the series is, because for a long time, most of these books were out of print and they're still woefully obscure. I still can't count on people to understand what I'm talking about when I reference them. So why don't you tell us about the Betsy Tacy series?
The Betsy Tacy series is a fictionalized biography of its author, Maud Hart Lovelace, and her childhood growing up in Mankato, Minnesota.
Mankato.
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 Minnesota.
Minnesota. It's all the same. West of the city. Do not put that in.
She said to the Chicago girl. It's okay. I've only lived here 15 years. It's all the same to me too.
And I knew that. I was just reading a Cackleberry Club mystery, which takes place outside Mankato. They are about a young girl growing up in the very late 1890s and 1900s, aka the Edwardian period, who wants to be a writer and has a delightfully intellectual and ambitious family who loves her very much.
Betsy also has a wonderful best friend, Tacy, and the two of them have a third best friend, Tib.
I just read about 300 pages of the Betsy Tacy Companion about the real life of Maud Hart Lovelace and her friends, and it's very hard not to say the actual people's names, but I'm gonna do my best. And I swear I'm not showing off for the Betsy Tacy fans who have not yet gotten their hands on a copy, because it's now hovering around $100.
One of these days, it's going to find its way into my hands, even if that means that if I ever visit you, I steal it.
Just give it a good home. That's all I ask. And
a good
maybe
home
scan
in my...
me a picture of Helmus Andrews, aka the handsome Herbert Humphreys.
Okay, so quick story. How I met Jennifer Hart over at HarperCollins is that I made Hey Girl Ryan Gosling memes with pictures of Helmut Andrews.
I remember that.
On Twitter.
Because I was helping you with it over on Facebook.
Yes, that's right. Oh my God. Hey Girl, let's be confidential friends.
Are you from Little Syria? Because I'm a little serious.
Oh my God. Now, when we said we're going to talk about Betsy Tacy Christmases, I don't think we ever talked about exactly which books we were going to look at. So I started at Betsy and Tacy Go Downtown.
So did I.
Good. Excellent. There are 12 in that book, but it's the first Christmas that we really hear about in the series. And it sets us up for the high school years where these traditions are solidified and where they grow and change just like the girls do. So a centerpiece of Betsy and Tacy's Christmas celebrations every year is Christmas shopping. Betsy and Tacy go shopping to shop. They each bring, and this is Tib too. The problem is sometimes I forget about when Tib's there and when Tib's not.
She's definitely there in downtown.
So they explain to their new friend, Winona, we always take 10 cents apiece and we always buy just the same things. So they go on this wonderful shopping trip, window shopping, where they go to every store in Deep Valley and pick out things that they would love to have, like beautiful dolls and fancy jewelry and perfume and horseless carriages in this book as well. But what they end up buying every year is one Christmas ornament each. And I've always loved that. And in fact, it's something that I try to do. I try to add a new Christmas ornament to my tree every year.
What's lovely is I did a little financial tomfoolery and I looked up how much 10 cents would be nowadays. And it's around $273, which is around what H and I paid for our new Christmas ornaments, because we picked some ornaments for our first Christmas together in the same house.
Aww.
Actually, today is our second anniversary.
Oh my God, happy anniversary.
To friend of podcast Hannah, we love you.
Yay, Hannah. And yay, Marie.
I would also like to note that Winona looks at a dollhouse, which is $25. And now, according to the same calculator, that was about $600 in our time, which is a very interesting amount because I think of what dollhouses cost, but then I think of the labor that would have gone into a dollhouse back then.
Yeah.
And it kind of works out because handcrafted dollhouses with all the little appurtenances, as they put it, they can get very spendy very quick.
I bet, yeah.
So this is also the first book where we get to look in at the Reyes family Christmas and the traditions therein. I can read that aloud.
Oh, please do.
On Christmas Eve, it was brought indoors, the Christmas tree. It was set up in a corner of the dining room and a star was fixed on its crest. Strings of popcorn and cranberries were woven through its branches that were hung with colored balls. Betsy put on the red ball she had bought that year's Christmas shopping. She looked for the harp she had bought last year and the angel from the year before. When all was ready, the candles were lighted. Bits of live flame danced all over the tree. Betsy's mother went to the piano then. They all sang together. A Little Town of Bethlehem. It came upon a midnight clear and silent night, most beloved of all. Let's read about the Cratchit's Christmas dinner, Mr. Ray said. He always said it. He crossed his legs and got out his pipe, and Betsy went to the bookcase for Dickens' Christmas Carol. Betsy read aloud about the Cratchit's Goose and Tiny Tim. Margaret pretended to read. She knew it by heart. 'Twas the night before Christmas. Julia read the story of Jesus' birth out of the Book of Luke. The stockings were hung around the hard coal heater. Mr. and Mrs. Ray and Raina all hung stockings, too. In some families, Betsy had heard, only children hung stockings. But it was not so in the Ray house. Mr. Ray complained loudly of the smallness of his sock. The lamps were turned low and they scurried around in the dimness, putting presents in one another's stockings. One could not avoid seeing knobby bundles being stuffed into one's own stocking.
And it goes on, if I'm remembering, to talk about just the excitement that the girls have going to bed that night. And talking about believing in Santa and talking about hearing the reindeer on the roof.
It does, because Margaret's getting to the age where she's starting to figure some things out, and her sisters help her along the way to understand how Santa Claus could get down their chimney. It's funny because earlier in the chapter before where Betsy, Tacy, and Tib, they're shopping with Winona for the first time. Winona's like, you kids believe in Santa Claus?
That's all right.
And I'm like, yeah, we're going to believe in him even when we're married.
I love that scene.
It's very sweet. And it's a very sweet scene. Downtown might be my favorite of the series. It's very hard to pick one of your children if you're a fan.
Yes, exactly. I think Downtown is my favorite, too. It's the book that made me want to be a writer. So it will always have a special place in my heart for that.
I remember I read it in fourth grade, and it sort of solidified a lot of ideas I had about the things you like being something you can do when you're older. Fourth grade was a really hard year for me, but I had a great teacher who encouraged my reading and writing all the time.
Aw, that's really wonderful.
How did you discover the series?
My mom, she read these books growing up in the 40s, and she either recommended them to me when I was maybe in first or second grade. It was either my mom gave me a copy of Betsy Tacy that she found at the library, or I found it at the library and she said, oh, I loved these books when I was a kid, and that made me really want to read them. I remember trying to press them onto my best friend at the time, and she would not have any of it because she read the chapter in Betsy Tacy and Tib where they mess themselves up and put mud all over their faces to pretend that they're beggars so they can go get food from people. And she was like, those girls are slobs. I'm not going to read about the slob girls.
That is such a kid thing. That's, I know, fantastic. When I was also in fourth grade, my teacher gave me a copy of Harriet the Spy for Christmas. She gave all of us a copy of A Christmas Carol and then a book she individually chose for each of us. And that was the perfect book.
Oh my God. I want to have your teacher.
I do too. I want to have her again. I know I'm 32, but so... Long Secret was in our class and I read it and I was not emotionally ready for it at the time, which is, you know, fair. Kids usually pick out what's appropriate for them and they can recognize when something's not for them yet. I keep telling that to myself with, you know, all the V.C. Andrews I read in the years to come. And I was really mortally offended because the main character in The Long Secret gets her period. And I was really upset and I told the teacher, I don't think it should be on the shelves. And I think she told me, I'll take that into consideration. And neither of us brought it up again.
Wow. When I was in fourth grade, I was reading Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, over and over again, and like counting down the days, like surely this will be the day when I become a woman. And I had to wait a very, very long time. Fourth grade me was very disillusioned by the time she got to be ninth grade me. But anyway, back to 12-year-old Betsy. The other thing I wanted to talk about in Downtown was Mrs. Poppy, who is a wonderful character. And in Downtown, as the name suggests, the girls really get to start exploring their town of Deep Valley on their own for the first time. Most of their adventures downtown end up centering around Mr. and Mrs. Poppy, to very fancy people who move from the Twin Cities into Deep Valley and bring all kinds of exciting fancy culture with them. And Betsy, being the most friendly girl in the world, takes an immediate liking to Mrs. Poppy. Mrs. Poppy ends up loving her and Tacy and Tib as well. And you were going to say something and I talked over you.
So... for our readers and listeners who have read the series but don't know all of the background, in fact, this wasn't even mentioned in the latest editions of the Betsy Tacy series, which do have some biographical content. So if you do want to read them, get those copies because they've got lots of great pictures and information.
Yes, and again, thank you, Jennifer Hart, for all the work you did. I know she was kind of instrumental in bringing these books back into print and in these wonderful editions. So yay.
Thank you. So to break some of your illusions, there were two Mrs. Poppies. There was Roma Salpaw, who was the wife of the guy who owned the hotel and who was the beautiful, showy, blonde lady whose husband owned an automobile where Tib, who is Midge in real life, had her infamous ride. So along with Roma Salpaw, there was Nettie Snyder, who was a music teacher and whose husband was a manager at the hotel and who taught many of the girls music and dancing, especially the bassist for Julia, Kathleen Hart, Maud's sister, who many of these mentoring scenes. She's probably the basis for that.
She throws a Christmas party for the girls the day after or a few days after Christmas?
It's a few days after Christmas.
I've always loved the description at the beginning of that chapter. She says, to go from before Christmas to after Christmas was like climbing and descending a high glittering peak.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes on to say that it was different this year because this year held the promise of Mrs. Poppy's party. And that's another thing that I've taken with me from the books. I always try to have something to look forward to shortly after Christmas so that descending that glittering peak isn't as abrupt.
So I'm sure that Betsy, in spite of herself, was really dear to your heart because of that.
Yes.
And what happens there, but we will get to that one.
And Mrs. Poppy steps in and becomes a true mentor for Julia, Betsy's sister, and for Betsy as well. It's pretty significant that Mrs. Poppy gives the girls a gift of perfume. They each get the perfume that they were eyeing at the store when they went on their Christmas shopping expedition, as Mrs. Poppy knows things. And it feels like a real rite of passage, like starting to move into adulthood. And Betsy, being the kind girl she is, gives Mrs. Poppy a hug.
And a kiss.
And a kiss. And Mrs. Poppy says, "Betsy, you've given me a Christmas present." Aww. And that's exactly what Betsy had wanted to do. It's such a sweet scene. And it points the way toward Mrs. Poppy becoming more accepted and to the Ray girls having more of a relationship with her, and to a big, exciting reveal at the end of the book that I won't spoil if you haven't read it. But Mrs. Poppy does a lot of good in Deep Valley, and especially for the Ray family.
Happy sigh. And this is the book where Betsy gets her first taste of being a published author, which is a theme we will get to see throughout the entire series, is her relationship with writing and also publishing.
Yes. I mean, I'm going to say this a million times talking about the Betsy Tacy books, but she set me up for like years of disappointment. But one thing that didn't set me up for disappointment was like the rejections that she gets and the lack of response that she gets when she sends her writing out into the world. That was very, very familiar to me, because already at age 7 or 8, when I was reading these books, I was sending poems out to Highlights magazine on the regular. I was trying to get my poems published in the little school newspaper. I was making all kinds of great plans, just like Betsy and Tacy and Tib do.
The adults in this series are wonderfully supportive of all of the dreams and plans and ideas that Betsy and her friends bring to them.
That's true. Even when the girls decide that one of them is going to marry the King of Spain in Over the Big Hill. Shall we move on to high school?
Yes. So I didn't read the high school books until I was in eighth grade, and I ended up getting the first three of them as a graduation present for eighth grade. And it's definitely a stark contrast from the earlier books when, although Downtown bridges them nicely, you've got a new illustrator, you have a new writing style, you have boys.
Oh my God, do you have boys? When I was reading the books for the first time, this was when most of them were out of print, and my library had up through Betsy in spite of herself. So it wasn't until my 20s that I got to find out what happened to Betsy post-sophomore year of high school. And Heaven to Betsy and Betsy in spite of herself, that's where I'm talking about the disappointment that Betsy set me up for, because I really thought at age 7 or 8 that high school was going to be a magical time where all the boys would be in love with me and we would have sing-alongs and dance and make fudge every day. And that did not happen.
I am very gently shaking my fist at Maude Hart Lovelace because of that.
Now, you've read The Companion. How much of this is romanticized, and how much do we think really happened?
The books are follow her history so closely that there are days and dates that can be verified. She does tend to color up interactions and give plots where there weren't plots in real life, and also move around some things. And her editor told her, you can't have too many characters. So like Mrs. Poppy and Winona, some people were combined.
Right.
But this followed her high school career very closely. And we sadly do not have Maude Hart Lovelace's diaries, because she burned them because she said they were full of boys, 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 boys.
Yes. But then again, so were the books. So Heaven to Betsy is the book in which Betsy gets a Ouija board for Christmas, and the Ouija board predicts that the next few weeks will hold T-R-O-U-B-L-E. And it's true, because the boy she likes starts paying attention to another girl.
So if she had run the board with anybody but Tacy, she wouldn't have taken it seriously. But Tacy would never pull that kind of prank on her.
No.
So Betsy, who is just learning how to interact with boys, doesn't know how to handle her affections for the boy she calls the tall, dark stranger, Tony, who is Mike Parker in real life, and who was not very tall, but was very handsome.
Yes, I have seen the pictures.
So when Tony does start to show interest in her, she doesn't quite know what to do. And when her friend Bonnie shows interest in him in her efforts to... What would you say was her motivation?
I think that Bonnie had a thing for Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was definitely there. Mm-hmm. There's also a bit for sure about her being the minister's daughter and, you know, wanting to encourage everyone, including Tony, who was kind of the bad boy, to come to Christian Endeavor nights and come to church and be good kids. But also, like, she could have spent just as much time trying to reform any other boy. But it was tall, dark stranger Tony that she chose.
So we have this wonderfully excruciating episode where they all go out skating and Betsy hates skating, as Maude Hart Lovelace hated the cold and most sports. And so they're out skating and Tony says, you know, I'm going to go smoke outside the bonfire. And even the boys are shocked because they're like, you know, we smoke behind the barn, but not when girls are around. Bonnie takes the opportunity to reform him. And it's a very good line. He asks, you know, are you here to reform or ask me to skate? And she's like, skate. And off they go. And Betsy, quote unquote, twists her ankle.
And Betsy is so good at bringing the drama. You know, her sister is not the only actress in the mm-hmm. family. Oh my God, the convalescence in Heaven to Betsy is so wonderful.
She stays in bed to wallow in her misery. And she does tell Anna, who is their lovely, they call her the hired girl. She's the cook, the maid, and general housekeeper and a wonderful figure in the high school series and beyond. Although in real life, she was with the Hart family for a very short time. Betsy tells Anna, I don't think I could eat anything. You know, I feel too wretched. And when Anna comes up for the breakfast tray, it's been cleared.
Yep.
But just also how I act when I'm miserable. So.
Yep. Now, this isn't the only big change that Betsy is going through around Christmas time. She and her sister Julia are also talking about changing religions. And I've always loved this plot thread in the book because there aren't that many YA and middle grade books, and certainly not at this time period, about like questioning your religious faith and thinking about changing it. Now, they're just going from one Christian denomination to another, but it's significant, and it's very significant to them and to their family. And I love the way the Rays handle it.
This was something that happened in real life where Kathleen and Maude both converted to becoming Episcopalians, although for Maude, it was before she entered high school. And Julia and Betsy in the book discuss with each other how the service moves them and how singing for an Episcopalian church makes them feel. And Betsy is not one to put her very deep religious feelings into a lot of words. Well, she even says in the series, if she could have written her father a letter about it, she could have done it. But actually speaking was something that it was too dear to her. And it's really nice to see a decision so consciously weighed and something that remains really important to the sisters throughout the rest of their high school career. And even there are scenes of Betsy grappling with her faith all the way up to Betsy's wedding.
It's a really wonderful aspect of the series.
So interestingly enough, I learned from one of the forwards to the new editions that Heavens to Betsy was banned in the New York Public Library system for some time because of the question of their change of faith. It was considered to potentially controversial for their YA collection.
I had never even thought of any of these books being banned, but there you go.
I mean, I think we could consider this a segue to something I should mention if you are reading these books for the first time, that this is about a middle-class white family in Minnesota in the early 1900s. There is some really uncomfortable talk of Native Americans on the warpath, and in the fourth high school book, there is a picture of Tony in blackface, which doesn't need to exist because that's not mentioned. Yeah. One, it's not mentioned in the text, and two, it's 2017. That doesn't need to exist at all.
Yeah, I think it is mentioned briefly in the text.
Right. Okay, now I
remember. There is absolutely no reason for that to be the lead picture. I'm sure that Vera Neville drew many, many other pictures.
You could just Photoshop that cigarette out. We will put a show note for what that reference is.
Yes, unless you know it, in which case, like, points to you. You're our people. And I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you found us.
Yes, I was really heartened to learn that Maude Hart Lovelace became involved in the civil rights movement in her later days. And if you do read the series, she does have a wonderfully justice-minded attitude, unfortunately colored by what she grew up with. And I was glad to hear that, you know, this was something that she did care about and changed later on.
That's wonderful. That's so good to know.
Because so many of our heroes disappoint us
every single day.
Except the ones that listen to this podcast. We love you.
Yes, we love you, heroes. It's interesting thinking about the way Maude wrote about people of different backgrounds and different cultures. Because the book Betsy and the Great World, I have only been able to read once because it is so, like, Betsy takes a ride on the It's a Small World boat and meets a bunch of European stereotypes. It's so, whenever I do a reread, I skip right from high school to marriage.
Her daughter, Miriam Kirchner, wrote one of those chapters. She wrote the chapter where Betsy is in Paris.
I remember nothing about when Betsy's in Paris, but that is awesome.
She meets up with a famous author that she knew from the boat going over and has a wonderfully Parisian day with her chaperone, who is a older but not uptight or fussy, dignified lady. There's no Christmases in that one, so we can just skip over it.
I didn't even go up to Betsy's wedding. I did downtown and the high school books. I couldn't remember if she and Joe have a Christmas.
They do, and they talk about how they took on the best parts of the traditions from the Ray family, but they also were beginning to create some of their own, which is something we talked about a little bit last week.
Yeah, see, Bjorn and Trish, you could have learned so much from Betsy and Joe. And I bet nobody built an ice cave either.
I mean, I bet Winona did.
If anybody built an ice cave, it was either Winona or maybe Tony. So Betsy, in spite of herself, should we move on to Betsy's sophomore year, as long as we're talking about European stereotypes. I love this one because Betsy has her first Christmas away from home. By this point, Tib and her family have moved back to the magical land of Milwaukee. And an invitation arrives for Betsy to join the Mueller family for a magical Christmas time. And it's so much fun to read.
Like, even leading up to her visit, there's some wonderful, and I'm going to keep using the word wonderful because this is how I feel about these books, besides the stereotypes and classism and all those things that pervade literature in general. Even leading up to her visit, Betsy first acknowledges that it's pretty wonderful of her dad to let her go, his concern not being the expense or a girl traveling by herself, but that she would miss out on their family Christmas, but also acknowledging it would be a wonderful experience for a girl who wants to be a writer.
Right. As he points out, at this time, Milwaukee is kind of like a little Germany, and he says it's going to be almost like visiting another country, and that's kind of how it feels for Betsy. And she gets to take a train for the first time. And I remember thinking about Betsy's experience the whole time I took my first train ride, which was several years after I read Betsy in Spite of Herself. But my grandmother sprung for first class tickets for me and my mom when I was going to a choral convention in Boston. And I remember it feeling just as glamorous as Betsy had promised.
That's so good to hear. I'm so glad.
And that is the story of the time I went on the train for the first time. Although the train did not sing the Milwaukee song while I was on it. It did not even sing a Boston song. I've noticed that trains do not sing as much as they do in the Betsy books.
I'm sure that the MTA sings, but I don't think that any of the things that they sing can be repeated on this family podcast.
Family podcast in scare quotes. You want to tell us a little bit about Germany, even though, or Milwaukee, Little Germany, even though, as we found out, as you tragically revealed to me, there was never a Milwaukee Christmas for Maud herself.
There was a Milwaukee Christmas. There wasn't a Christmas at the Grosspapa Müller's because Grosspapa Müller had passed away before Maud went to Milwaukee. But the experience that she has there is taken from Kathleen Hart's visit to Germany when Betsy is a senior in high school and the German Christmas that she had, which is very elaborate and beautiful and full of German traditions with a giant Christmas tree and singing and Kuchen, aka cookies, and they're, as Tib puts it, the fairy Christ child is the one who delivers the gifts. And after they come back from singing and eating, there are tables set out for every family member. And even Betsy, who is a guest, finds presents for herself. And we should probably dial back a little bit and talk about Maud and Midge, aka Tib and Betsy, meeting for the first time in several years.
Yeah, I love that scene when Betsy and Tib meet for the first time, because if you have ever had the experience of reuniting with a friend, and I just got to do that last night with my friend Liz after about 10 years of not seeing each other. But, you know, no matter how close you were at the time that you were seeing each other on a regular basis, it still feels strange to see each other again after all these years. And you're kind of dancing around each other, kind of trying to impress one another. I feel like this does change a bit when you're old like me. Like, there was very little of that last night seeing a friend I hadn't seen in ages. But Betsy and Tib are kind of putting on airs with each other, and they're feeling strange around each other, and they keep saying things like, oh, I bet we'll talk all night, and then they don't. They go like right to sleep, and it's kind of awkward. But the more time Betsy spends with Tib, the more they recapture their old friendship.
The next morning, they go to service at the Episcopalian church, since Betsy has converted and they're now the same religion. Betsy says of the boy choir, "I felt like the heavens were opening up." And Tib says, "I think we should have worn overshoes," which is Betsy and Tib in a nutshell. And Betsy thinks affectionately, yeah. as she does many times in the series, "That's just like Tib."
There's a great essay, by the way, that is called "Isn't That Just Like Tib?" And I believe it's on the Betsy Tacy Society webpage. I hope it still is. We can put a link to it in the show notes. Tib is that friend you love and admire so much, but doesn't always like get it when you go on your flights of fancy. Or maybe I am just so used to being the Betsy that I assume that everybody has a Tib rather than everybody is a Tib.
Definitely something I can identify with. I was the Betsy of my friend group. I was the one always coming up with plans and clubs. And I was lucky. I had many imaginative friends who went along with it. But I also had my share of Tibs. And I loved them just the same.
Exactly. I was very much a Betsy, especially in my neighborhood where I was the oldest in my cohort of kids. So I got to be the one who came up with the ideas and told people what to do. And sometimes they even listened.
That's amazing.
So Christmas in Milwaukee, I loved reading about it. Again, as an adult, because I ended up living for years in a traditionally German neighborhood in Chicago and seeing some of those traditions come to life, both in my neighborhood and also in just the city of Chicago itself. We have a Christkindl market that's kind of like a nightmare if you hate crowds of people, as I do, but I push through every few years. I hate crowds of people, but I love Christmas ornaments, and I love wandering around what looks like a German fairyland and eating delicious food and drinking hot chocolate and buying one special ornament just like Betsy.
And taking pictures of creepy Santas and elves.
Yes, although most of the creepy Santas and elves come from the Vintage Garage holiday market, which did not happen this year. And that made me very sad. But hopefully next year I will return with more creepy Santa and creepy elf photos.
Where I grew up in Staten Island, our traditional Christmas markets were the Christmas fairs at the Catholic schools. So throughout the month of December, each of the Catholic schools would open up their gym, and the mothers' clubs and the fathers' clubs and various small businesses and artisans who belong to that parish would each have a table, and you could get homemade Christmas cookies, stocking stuffers. Usually there were games for the little kids, and you could win a goldfish and piss off your parents. And of course, there were raffles where you could win a giant basket of cheese and piss off your parents. So I'm always surprised that we don't, and we meaning where I grew up, we don't do more about La Befana, the Christmas witch.
Yeah, I love La Befana.
She was shaking out her carpets and dusting her front stoop when the three kings came and said, you know, you have to go see the newborn Christ child. And she says, no, I'm too busy cleaning. So now she, to make up for this, she rides around on a broom and leaves presents for all good little Italian children.
That's so cool. I was always jealous of the kids who got to have visits from La Befana, or kids who got to have visits from St. Nicholas on the 6th, as well as on the 25th. bring on all the extra Christmases, I say.
In my family, we do leave the tree up until Three Kings Day. And that's also the day that Hannah and I usually go out to where my family is, because we split up for Christmas, and you know, she goes to Blibbity Blop, but I go to Schmoobity Doo.
Love Schmoobity Doo. But yeah, I love that now we're being coy. We still don't know where Hannah's going. Multiple Christmases are fun. And we have two more Christmases to talk about before our time is done here. So should we talk a little bit about Betsy's junior year? A big theme in that book is Betsy growing up and not wanting to. And Tacey and Tib especially feeling the same way. Tacey says when they're going shopping, "We're growing up and I don't like it."
So Tib has returned to Deep Valley and they have a wonderful school year together, including their traditional trip to the Christmas market. And I will read about that. Betsy, Tacey, and Tib, too, went on their traditional Christmas shopping trip. It was glorious to have Tib back for that. Three abreast, they swung along a crowded, festive front street. Their laughter froze above their lips into white clouds. As when they were children, they shopped for everything. Jewels, perfumes, toys, furs, especially furs this year. Yet they broke with the past. They made some purchases besides the Christmas tree ornaments, which had once been the sole glittering purpose of the trip. "We're growing up and I don't like it," said Tacey, as they sat in Heinz's later, drinking coffee. "We are," Betsy leaned forward, suddenly tense. "Look at us just sitting here drinking coffee. Just look." Tib and Tacey, moved by earnestness, looked into the mirror which ran along the wall. They saw three girls wearing big, stylish, top-heavy hats. Betsy's was covered with green wings. They had laid off their coats and their shirtwaists were trim and snowy. Their fingernails were polished. "I don't see anything so special," Tib remarked. "Why, we're sitting here drinking coffee," Betsy repeated somewhat lamely, "and not just for a lark." Tacey's thoughts followed hers. "We're actually juniors," she said, stopping in for coffee after shopping. "Not freshmen or sophomores pretending to be juniors stopping in for coffee after shopping." Tib looked confused. "You usually take chocolate," she said. "I've just gotten you in the habit of coffee because I come from Milwaukee." "But Tib," Betsy cried, "that isn't the point. The point is we're so frightfully old. We might have husbands waiting at home," said Tacey. "Wanting their suppers," added Betsy. "Oh, it's not so bad," answered Tib, and they all began to laugh.
I love Betsy trying to explain things to Tib. And this especially, and she keeps going like, "But we're juniors and we're drinking coffee." And Tib's like, "I don't get it." And it just sounds dumber and dumber as Betsy says it. But I totally know what she means. And I think the readers do as well.
No, for sure. I remember that being an age where I was feeling many feelings about having to grow up and how terrible I thought it was.
Yep.
So if we have any teenage listeners, it does get better. You could not pay me enough money to go back to being a teenager, especially now.
Oh my God. No, no, no. I am very happy to be hashtag old right now. Before we talk about Betsy's senior year, I want to bring up something that I love about Betsy was a junior. I think it's the Christmas church service they go to where there's a sermon that gets at the heart of the book and is something that is really resonating with me right now. I think Julia explains it to Betsy later when they're talking about it. She says, "Our lives can hold just so much. If they're filled with one thing, they can't be filled with another. We ought to do a lot of thinking about what we want to fill them with." And that really gets to Betsy, who's been having a super fun and frivolous year. And she starts thinking about making some changes and deciding who she really wants to be. And that sets her up for the Betsy she becomes as she grows up and as we see in her senior year of high school in Betsy and Joe.
The Christmas in Betsy and Joe is incredibly bittersweet, but it's also wonderful to read as an adult because it's a big turning point in Betsy's life and in her becoming the woman she grows up to be.
It's the first Christmas without Julia, for one thing. And that is strange and sad. And for Betsy, who has always been very much of a homebody, that one trip to Milwaukee notwithstanding, it's strange for her to be thinking about how a year from then she will also be out in the world, quite possibly. She may not be having Christmas at home again. And it won't be like when she was in Milwaukee and it was a fun trip. She'll be becoming an adult and making her own way in the world. And things will be different. As Tib says, We can't go on doing the same things forever. And Tib is very practical, and she understands this, while Betsy and Tacy are a bit quick to romanticize the present and the past. Now, the other reason Betsy and Joe is a bittersweet Christmas is that Betsy is dealing with real heartbreak, and it's much worse than what she dealt with in Heaven to Betsy, because the stakes are higher. It's real, true love. It's not a fantasy about a tall, dark stranger. It's her love for Joe Willard, and also her love for Tony, who is still a part of her life and who she still cares about deeply, even as she's fallen in love with Joe.
I have the excerpt from where she is giving herself a good talking to about how she feels versus what she feels she must be to make a happy Christmas for her family. Betsy got up and went to the window. The gas in her room was not yet lighted, so she could see clearly into the out-of-doors. Snowflakes were whirling against the arc light, and the drifts which covered the lawn had already received a fresh, soft, unblemished blanketing. It was Christmas Eve, and she was 17. Julia was across the ocean, and so there devolved on her the subtle responsibilities of the oldest daughter. All the careful planning in the world, the nicest presents, wreaths in the window, and candy canes in the doorways would not make Christmas Eve a happy time in any house, unless the people in that house were happy. Betsy's eyes were red. No forced gaiety would make the hearts of others light. "I couldn't be so mean," Betsy said fiercely. "Please, God, help me to take Julia's place tonight."
I love that scene. And she does her best. Yay, Betsy.
I think anybody in her family who knows her knows that she is doing her best. But they still have a wonderful Christmas, where Mr. Ray gifts the family with a Westminster chime clock. And in a hint from her historic and Gothic literature, Maud Hart Lovelace uses the chiming of the clock to tick away the hours where Betsy is heartbroken, but putting on a good face. I think there's other shades of the bittersweetness which happened in Maud Hart Lovelace's life. There's a scene in this book particularly where the little sister Margaret gets a doll, and Mrs. Ray says how sad it will be when she doesn't want a doll, and Margaret says, "I'll always want one." And then Mr. Ray says, "No, we'll have grandchildren in a few years." And sadly, they did not have grandchildren for a long time, because Maud lost her first baby, and Kathleen also lost her middle child, and Helen adopted, Helen who was the real Margaret. So the reason that we never got Betsy's Bettina, the sequel to Betsy's Wedding, is because it would have been very hard for Maud to deviate so much from what had really happened. Everything terrible happens at Christmas.
It really does. Even in this book, everything terrible happens. These books are so much fun to revisit. And if you haven't read them, go out and do that. After we've made you read Gothic horror at Christmas time, enjoy some happy Midwest Christmas. So I have a read-alike for this week, and it is a book that's got some sad parts to it. It's a dead parent book. Yay! It's The Wondrous World of Violet Barnaby by Jenny Lundquist. A really sweet book about a girl dealing with grief after the death of her mom and her father's remarriage to the most terrifying teacher at her middle school. And Violet discovers kind of a bucket list that her mom wrote to her of fun things for Violet to do to make memories, new memories at Christmas time. And she does these things and involves her friends in the community and a cute boy. And of course, there's friend conflict and secrets and all kinds of great middle grade hallmarks that complicate things, but everything turns out all right. It's a sweet read, and it put me in mind immediately of the Betsy Tacy books and how they handle Christmas and Christmas traditions and family. So what's your read-alike?
The Emily Bird Star series by Lucy Maud Montgomery.
Ah! Yes! I was thinking specifically of Christmas. Otherwise, if I were just thinking the series as a whole, Emily, absolutely. Those two are tied for me. So tell us about Emily.
I'll let the train speak first.
She's psychic! That's what the train said.
So the Emily Bird Star series is Ellen Montgomery's favorite of her heroines, and it's about a young orphan girl who goes to live with two of her aunts and her uncle. She wants very much to be a writer, but her clannish and eccentric family does not understand her ambitions.
Also, she's psychic.
Oh, she is psychic. Lucy Maud Montgomery loves sneaking some psychic spiritualist brouhahas into her books.
And this series takes Emily from age 11. Is she 11?
She's 11.
One, up through adulthood. And is very similar to Betsy in that as well.
There is a creepy older man in it. He doesn't do anything. He just exists.
He exists. That is more than enough. Every time I reread it, I'm like, I forgot just how creepy he was. How?
And it gets creepier as you get older.
Ugh, yeah.
But Emily herself and her little group of best friends and her family are wonderful to read about. Lucy Maud Montgomery has an unimitable voice. And there's also like the wonderful nature of Prince Edward Island. There's lots about becoming a writer and making a career as a writer, which is similar to the Betsy books. And there are a few family Christmases, although they tend to be more tragicomic.
So, Marie, what are you currently reading?
I am currently reading, as in I just downloaded it and started reading while we had to take a podcast break, The Ghost of a Chance by Natalie Vivian. It is a ghostly romance set in a snowy cabin. The elevator pitch is, what if a new woman walked into your life while you're still haunted by the woman you lost?
So the same book as The Wondrous World of Violet Barnaby, then.
Oh, yeah. So I've heard that the British love to do spooky Christmas Eve, and that is a tradition I am all for. And I will do my best to replicate what my brother did this year.
Spooky Christmas Eve at my house or at my mom's house is putting all the creepy ornaments up on the tree and seeing just how many terrifying little elves there are. And we try to put them on the back. They are our load-bearing ornaments. We have a whole collection of those. You put them on the back to balance out the tree so that it doesn't fall over. But the elves, no one remembers where they came from or why they exist. Why? They are there, though.
I think they are expats from the shelf. They no longer want to be part of a surveillance culture.
I think they were exiled from the shelf. I don't think anything. I don't think they're in league with Santa. I think they're in league with someone very different.
My friend Kyle and I had come up with a non-denominational version of, well, several non-denominational versions of the elf called the gnome while you're alone and the creep while you sleep.
Oh, that's great.
If you search Pinterest, you will find other adult versions of this, but we at Go Your Own YA do not condone the use of that word when it comes to women.
On a different subject, what am I reading this week? My current read is The Authentics by Abdi Nazamian. It is a new-ish, very new actually. It came out in August. a new contemporary YA about cultural identity and families of birth, families of choice, families of friends, and, you know, figuring out who you are, which is something that I'm always fascinated by, and I recommend it.
It sounds great, and I'll have to keep an eye out for it at my library. Readers and listeners, you can find us at Go Your Own YA at all of the usual suspects: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, your mom.
Especially your mom. Please send us comments, send us compliments, send us critiques. Send us tickets to Milwaukee so we can have a German Christmas with Grosspapa Muller and Grosspapa Hornick. That sounds like a lot of fun.
But don't send us the Merry Widow Waltz.
Don't send us TROUBLE.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Okay, readers and listeners, that was episode 14.
I can't believe it.
I know.
How we're teenagers.
We've come so far. And we could not do it without all the amazing editing work by host Carrie.
Or all of the awesome social media and other behind the scenes wrangling. I don't even know half the wrangling that she does of host Ree.
And the amazing, thank you, the amazing Christmas gift from friend of the podcast, Hannah. Thank you, Hannah.
Yay. Oh, we have to do one little bit of housekeeping, which is to say that not enough of you told us the anagrams for your names, but those of you who did, James Kennedy, you win.
Yeah, I don't see how it could be topped, but you are more than welcome to try.
We're not going to say what it was.
This is a family show.
James can if he wants.
And probably will.
We will have to have him on the show. We will have him on the show. And this thing is going to go off the rails so fast. I can't wait. So that's Go Your Own YA. That's what this has been. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Saturnalia. Happy Yule. Happy Santa Lucia Day.
And do something good for yourself.
And bad for the patriarchy.
Ba la 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 la.